Well, good evening. We have an unfamiliar face and a brand new face in here tonight. So Jane Jasper is here fresh from New Mexico on the way to Arcata tomorrow and Willits after. And Oscar is tasting Zazen in a group for the first time. Welcome. Do introductions around. You won't remember, but...
I'm Donald Lynn.
Wendy.
Kitty.
Jane.
Lauren.
Samuel.
Dan.
Great.
Jane.
Jules.
So because of the Arcata Willits adventure, I'll be gone next week, and I've asked Michael if he would fill in, Michael Newhall. So I hope those of you who are going to be in town, I know Jane's going to be away, and you will too, but the rest of you, if you can honor Michael, it's a real treat that he's able to come down.
He knows our rough schedule, right?
I think so, yeah. And you can always, you know, jiggle him through it. He's very relaxed.
So he'll be here for Saturday?
No, Carolyn's going to do Saturday. But Michael does Tuesday, next Tuesday night. So you're well covered. I feel okay. I shouldn't. You're right, Sam, yeah. Yeah. Just don't throw spitballs. Tush, tush. I decided that I would do handouts for this Shanti Deva study. It seemed like maybe the easiest way to talk around it. It seemed like we were kind of talking into the air the last couple of times. And I don't know, maybe it's my own limitation about this in the first place. But let's try this and see if... There are really notes that I took as I read through a great deal of material. So it's not very, very, very organized. But I hope it's enough organized that it can be helpful as you read through. And then there's another one. Thank you, Jules. Thank you. So although we've said that the basic teaching in this Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life is the six paramitas. As you begin to read, you see that there's not very much about the paramitas at all in the first three chapters. In fact, almost nothing. There's a little about generosity. The first chapter is, in fact, all three chapters are really creating the mind the Bodhisattva mind, the mind of aspiration, to start with before discussing any ways to enact Bodhisattva-ness. Without that mind of enlightening being, it doesn't make sense to talk about how to be. So actually, see, I have two minds about this, the way to talk about this. I should tell Oscar that Bodhisattva is a way of explaining how we set our intention in our life, how we allow ourselves to cultivate our basic goodness and see the basic goodness in others, and in fact make others our project. We vow to save all sentient beings, meaning instead of meeting people from a high place or a defended place, to be willing to accept and admit and allow other people in our life as primary, as central to our existence. So it's a kind of switch, and yet if we really study it, we begin to feel how that is where we're coming from. If our fears drop away, if our doubts about ourselves, our self-doubt, we begin to realize a kind of I want to say similarity of my life for his life and her life. Usually we notice the differences. Usually we set ourselves up to be different. And usually we cultivate the differences and then identify ourselves with the differences. So this is another kind of way of using our mind. It's a less anxious use of the mind. It's counterintuitive. We think, oh, it would be a kind of nervous business to just see others as equal to ourself. I mean, what would that mean? And yet the truth is that there's ease in that kind of mind. A tremendous ease. So these first three chapters are kind of setting oneself in the line of that, in the direction of allowing oneself to think in those terms. And begins with gratitude, an offering, one of the ways out of our self-involvement is expressions of gratitude. To spend at least a couple of minutes every day. Often the best time is when the whole day is over, just remembering those things which held and helped and supported us all during the day. That's what Shantideva does. He remembers his teachers. He remembers the teacher teachings. All the big and small things that go into making a life. We say my life, but if we begin to look and feel our gratitude, we begin to see how our life is all these things that help this to be what it is, to go where it goes. And then he makes offerings. That's one of my favorite parts of this. He offers lakes and waterfalls and flowers and mountains and rivers. I've told before how taking a walk with my friend Tinley, the Tibetan woman friend of mine who saw a beautiful rhododendron bush in full bloom, just the most beautiful bush in the world, and she stopped and she said, "Oh, I offer this beautiful bush to all beings, to all the Buddhas and all the beings." It's that kind of generosity that then Shantideva cultivates, and expression of gratitude. It's creating the foundation, you could say, for all the practices, the so-called practices that come. The mind is the mind of bodhisattva. This kind of mind is called bodhicitta. Bodhi meaning enlightenment, and citta meaning mind, or heart, or mind-heart. Enlightening mind heart. It isn't that we walk around being all holy and enlightened. But being willing to experience the light in the world. There's a lot of sort of condensed material in here. I don't know how many of you have Pema Chodron's book about this, about Shantideva's book. You do. And you do. Great. Great. That's the most helpful resource, I think, of all of them. She's got a very contemporary way of talking about these subjects without making them sound so esoteric that you wonder. And she has deep insight also. Very kind and very smart. So the first chapter is about identifying bodhicitta, you could say. Being willing to take note of that aspect of our life. A lot of times, the subject of enlightenment gets kind of mixed up, I would say. As if it were something very strange and different. And yet, it's so much a part of us that once we get a taste or a flavor, it works in us almost against our will. Maybe it is against our small mind will that's always trying to be a certain way and be a certain kind of person. And yet there's something working in us all the time that if we were to look at it carefully, we might find a way of identifying it as bodhicitta, a kind of calling or itch or reminder of something we know already and have in some sense known as children. I don't think it's a grown-up thing. So in a way you can talk about bodhisattva as cultivation of compassion and wisdom. Those are other words we could use about bodhicitta. The kind of natural compassion that arises in us. The natural wisdom that is us. That we can either ignore or cultivate. So maybe that's that's enough for now. You must have questions or Jules?
Question about like gratitude and the development of gratitude. One of my concerns is how do you stop that from becoming a form of grasping itself? I don't like to try and make things up.
Yeah.
And so if I praise the chair, for example, like, oh, this is such a great chair, you know, it just doesn't feel, it doesn't feel sincere to me.
No. No.
You know, you have any thoughts on that?
No, that isn't what I meant. It's more about whatever in your life is really helping you along. You don't notice it so very often, the things that help us. I mean, the chair, the cushion that holds you, that's why we bow to the cushion, is in gratitude. It is holding us up. So it does deserve some gratitude. And you could feel funny about that, but you wouldn't have to. But it's more about the people and the events that bring you to wherever you come. You know.
Like even bad events.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes, and there's a kind of relative view about good and bad, or good and evil. In fact, there's a little discussion on morality in here about that. Because if we get so polarized, then it's impossible to see how things really are, because the whole thing is embraced, both sides. And so cultivating gratitude is a way of being able to see that also, to see how it all fits together. All the causes and conditions that come together to make this moment, including the grief-stricken ones and the dark ones, you know, it's all of a piece. That's a good question.
I'm not sure this question relates to this, but maybe it does. So today I was at a stoplight and there was a guy with a sign, you know, wanting whatever money or something. And I always have, it irks me because I feel, you know, they need to work if they can.
Yeah.
They look very healthy. But sometimes I feel like, you know, if I contribute, it won't hurt me, but I can't get to that place. Mm. So I was eating nuts, and I'm thinking, well, maybe he's hungry. So I pulled out the bag. I said, do you want some nuts? And he smiled, and he goes like this. He doesn't have any teeth, and he's about my age, you know, with all no teeth. You know, so I just didn't offer anything else. And the car behind me, this young girl pulls out maybe $2-3 and of course all of that judgment is like, why are they giving them money, you know? They'll be happier if they go out and work and da da da, you know. But then I, in the rear view mirror, I looked at her face and she just looked so happy, you know, genuinely. And so I wonder, it's like, okay, she looked great. Maybe if I give her money, I'd look that good too. So you wonder sometimes when things like your friend bowed to the bush, I mean, the beauty of it is so natural. It just oozed out. You almost didn't have to work to bow to it and send it out. So sometimes I wonder, sometimes I feel like we induce the goodness. Should we do that? Because sometimes it helps once you start to kind of...
Yeah.
You know, or just sit back and just let it happen organically. Because it just seems every time, you know, you try to be nice, it just kind of backfires. And I know there's always a fine line, but...
Yeah, it's kind of both.
It seems like it's always both.
It's always both, yeah. You know, Shantideva just vowed to give it all away. Just the whole kit and caboodle.
And so forget about, like, you know, I worked hard. Why shouldn't you work hard? You know, forget
yes.
that.
Well, right? and in a way, that's a gift also.
Which?
To give people, if they're, you have to know that they're able and that they have a job to get.
So don't
but
just give, like,
well,
foolishly.
It's a kind of, my teacher was that way.
Yes.
And in a way it was a kind of idiot compassion,
right.
I thought sometimes, because he would, there was one time when he had just a little bit of money left, and no food, and a little baby, and he took the older kids to the ride the roller coaster, and blew the money that he had, and there was no money left for buying food. That I always, you know, that's carrying it so far. He wanted to please his kids, and I think he was worried about them, and he wasn't very practical in that way. So I think we have to decide each time what we're going to do. You know, and when we're making a kind of moral decision for somebody else, that's a tricky thing too. You know, I know somebody who goes out once a year and just gives away $20 bills to anybody who's on the street. But that's kind of a cheap thrill, you could say. And maybe, you know, a deeper way of going about it is simply to be willing to be with the toothless man in the way you were, which was generous as well. And even though it didn't work out, it comes and it goes. You know, we do the best we can.
And sometimes you wonder, is the giving for the person or yourself?
Yes. Yes, it's both, because it's the same. Which is why she was so happy. Yeah.
And you, my zazen is, I'm doing a lot of thinking on the cushion, it seems to come and go. And other than going to the first issue you can find, which is one solution not available to you at the moment, but are there ways to cultivate these practices on a cushion that we would call the Zen way, or would that be kind of borrowing more Tibetan practices?
Well, when we sit zazen, we just sit. Of course, the sixth one is, or fifth one is meditation itself. So, the fifth, practicing the fifth paramita is what we do when we sit zazen. It's how we do that paramita. So, and you don't need a sesshin to sit zazen. You can sit anywhere.
Guess what I mean to blow the carbs out or something, like the carburetors, you know, clean the carburetors.
Oh, you need the carburetor, you need all that. There isn't any need to do that. You can just sit with whatever's there. That's the best. Really be with it. Well, every time you think, you can just put it in your hands. Just put your thinking in your hands. It'll take care of it. It'll just keep on going and going. But you can let it go. If you fight it, it just becomes more. If you dislike it, it becomes more. So the first thing, if we're talking about acceptance, is accepting ourselves and our own mind. Really embracing it, acknowledging it, and letting it be what it is. Then you can work with it when you get up.
When I get up. Does that make the carburetor itself cleaning at that point?
Yes. Yeah. It's one of those newfangled ones. High-tech carburetor.
In terms of life on the cushion, life, like, I guess when you're not off the cushion, sometimes I try and think of the actions I do in my life kind of to help keep my head clear, so to speak, on the cushion. But I don't know, I think it feels a little bit erratic, because sometimes I feel when I'm on the cushion that there's some kind of insight into something that's going on in my life.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's lots of things seem to go on.
Yes.
Is that, I don't know, I'm concerned that it's too much thinking and too much,
It will take care of itself. You know, when we sit down, we're all thinking, because that's what the brain does. It thinks. It's a thinking machine. But as you begin to become more settled, the thinking itself becomes more settled. There become spaces in between the thoughts. And if you persist and just allow yourself to sit without having an agenda for yourself, if you set yourself up against yourself, what you're doing, then it just gets mixed up. But if you just let it take its own course, it has its own natural pattern, and it will quiet down of itself. If you're in a very, very desperate state, there are even practices on, you know, things to do if you're very, very upset. You know, you can count your breath. And of course, there are times when we have to take care of a situation and we don't sit because it's too pressing. But it's best if there's whatever's going on to just sit. And let it show itself and be itself. Let you be that, rather than trying to be something else. And then you can see it. There's more clarity. It's hard to do.
Sometimes it almost feels it's like, I don't know, too late, or, you know, or like, I mean, this thing is, takes.
Yeah. Well, we should stop. So let's talk about the second chapter when I come back. And